Hello and welcome to the Politically Speaking Podcast. I am your host, Chris McDaniel. Joining me, as always, is...
Jason Rosenbaum of the St. Louis Beacon.
Joe Manis of the St. Louis Beacon.
Unsurprisingly, we've got our first segment.
What could it be?
Oh, shock!
Is it going to be the Aiken-McCaskill race? Perhaps? Perchance?
Perchance. Yes, but yes. We do have updates on both sides, not just one candidate or the other. They've both been in the news lately.
Yes.
It's McCaskill, been a packed week, even this race.
Yes, yes. And the Aiken-McCaskill race has continued to block out the sun as far as any other race going on, frankly.
It's the spruce goose of Missouri politics. It's just so huge, it just blocks out the sun.
Yeah, it's making it hard for me to do my job, I would say.
Yeah, no, so here's kind of what's happened this week. The Aiken campaign jumped immediately on an Associated Press story, which had looked at all of the hundreds of companies that are listed on her financial disclosure report as having there's some income from her husband's business dealings. She releases her income tax returns. He does not. But he does, this is Joe Shepherd, does put...
Joe Shepherd being
McCaskill's
husband
since 2002. And he's a wealthy businessman and developer, and he's involved in a number of industries, particularly nursing homes and low-income housing. And he has been a favorite target of Republicans for years.
I was just going to say, it seems like every time McCaskill runs for something, they beat the Joe Shepherd drum. Every single time.
Yes. And it worked in 2004. They ran some ads, some pretty devastating ads, about a week or two before the election. And those ads are considered to have contributed to her narrow defeat, to her defeat by Matt Blunt in 2004 for governor. Now, in 2006, what she ended up doing was McCaskill went on TV with an ad in which she looked into the camera and explained that her husband's a wealthy businessman and developer. He has a number of interests, but she does not lobby for that. And that they're being transparent. So that is a backdrop. The Republicans have now globbed on to the over 100 companies of the 300 that he owns that are involved in low-income housing. If they're involved in low-income housing, if the tenants qualify for a rent subsidy, the rent subsidy goes to the owner, operator of the development, not the tenant. So in other words, let's say the rent on a place should be $600 and the tenant pays $200. The $400 goes to the owner, operator of the unit. Now, he is an investor in a number of projects where there are subsidized housing units and as well as unsubsidized. So the McCaskill campaign is contending that the profit that he is showing on the campaign, on her individual financial disclosure reports, are primarily the profit from the unsubsidized units.
Right.
The Aiken campaign and Republicans are jumping on the $40 million in federal subsidies that have gone to all these businesses since she took office for, as I said, for the low-income tenants. What her campaign is emphasizing is that most of this is required by law to be segregated into a special account and used only for maintenance of the units and cannot go for profit. But that said, the Aiken campaign announced, even as we speak, that they're going up with a statewide ad, hammering away what they contend is the wealth that they contend has gone from taxpayers to McCaskill's pocket. Again, she's saying, no, that's not where the money comes from, but this is election season, and this is what they're hammering on. Meanwhile, she has unveiled three new ads, hard-hitting ads, that feature rape survivors looking into the camera and saying that they condemn what Todd Aiken said about legitimate rape, and they condemn the fact that he wants to outlaw emergency contraception, which is a drug drug combination that is given to a rape victim if they want it that can prevent pregnancy if taken within a few days of unprotected sex.
And Republicans had to know that these were coming because this
Absolutely.
Was just low-hanging fruit for Democrats to not only the legitimate rape comments, but he made comments before to a Kansas City radio station where he was asked point blank,
right.
would he ban emergency contraception?
And even he in said the state? Yes.
I mean, if you're going to say those things, you're just making yourself a target for these types of ads. It just seems like it's a reap what you sow thing with Aiken.
But what's more powerful, she was waiting till after he couldn't possibly withdraw.
Of course.
But what makes it more powerful is the fact that these are rape victims.
Right. And there was one that said, I'm a Republican and I'm pro-life and I'm not voting for Todd Aiken because it's not only what he said, but what he believes in the sense of that policy thing.
And these ads are obviously targeting moderate women.
Yeah. Yes. And I don't really know how he responds to those. I mean, I remember back in 2008, and this is not a completely analogous situation, but in the 9th District race back then, Judy Baker released a really tough emotional ad against Blaine Lichtenmeyer, criticizing him for sponsoring a bill many years before that allowed for insurance without mammograms. It had a person with breast cancer. You know, he responded by bringing his daughter in an ad and saying, her grandparents had cancer, shame on you for doing it. I don't really know how Todd Aiken could do anything similar because he said those things much
more
recently.
Todd Aiken responds by not talking about this issue, I would think. He responds by just saying, hey, there's an AP story.
Hammering at Joe Shepard.
Yes, that is exactly
how
he responds.
I don't know because those are – I watched those ads. I'm sure you watched those ads. Those are striking, powerful ads that if they're going to be on TV for a while, they're going to, I think, be remembered by people.
But see, what's more important is how much money is behind these ads. McCaskill has been spending about $1 million a week on ads the last couple of weeks. If she puts a lot of money behind these ads and people see them a lot, it can have an impact. Aiken, conversely, has been not – he's been on TV, but actually very modest sums, only about under 50,000, around 50,000 statewide. In Missouri, you need to spend about 450,000 statewide, I'm told by consultants, in order to have a decent, solid presence. What he is hoping, I believe, is that some of these independent groups, what they can do, and this is legal, if you have an ad up, they can take that topic, find similar footage, and run an ad with the same message, even having your picture on it. And it doesn't count as a contribution, and they can hammer away at that. In fact, the Democratic Senatorial Campaign Committee and Emily's List and SEIU is already doing similar things on the Democratic side, hammering at Aiken with ads that are so similar that unless you look at the paid-for-by at the end, you wouldn't know that those aren't McCaskill ads. Those are independent ads. So this is what he's hoping for with the small buy, that this will prompt a deluge of Republican support.
Now, there are new ads, but not only in the Senate race. There are some new ads in the governor's race. And when I say governor, I mean governor with an ER at the end.
Right. This is one of the races that's getting blocked by the spruce goose, so to speak.
It is. It is. Well, it's not polling very closely. But this week, Dave Spence really attacked Governor Nixon pretty hard for the ads that he has been running, calling him a banker and saying that he accepted TARP funds. Calling Spence a banker and saying that Spence accepted TARP funds and then voted to not pay taxpayers back.
And there's other things. Yeah, you can go first.
Well, we need to explain that. I mean, okay, Spence served on the board of a bank, Reliance Bank, for about 5 years. And part of the time he was head of the holding, he was on the holding company, which oversees the bank. So he came on after the bank had already agreed
Absolutely.
To take $40 million in federal, basically bank bailout funds is what they're called.
Yeah.
Now, he also then was among the board members who voted to not start repaying them. This is an early before he left the board in early 2011. And so what Nixon's campaign has done is running this ad that is pointing to the loans that during this period that Spence and other board members got from the bank for various things.
Yeah, and I wanted to mention something that's been really gnawing at my craw for a while. And because logically, what they're saying is since he was a member of the board, he got a, quote, insider loan.
That is the technical term.
Now, that is a technical term, but it brings out the connotation that he wouldn't have been able to get that loan at another bank. And if somebody has $4 million to throw into the governor's race, he almost certainly – and I think reports have said he's worth, what, $200 million?
Correct. Yeah.
Are you saying that if he went into another bank, he couldn't get a loan for a vacation home for $1 million? It would be more advantageous for him not to take out the loan because he's paying interest.
Yeah, this is how banks make money, too.
To paraphrase former Senator Wes Schumacher, those banks would be doing front flips and going bazonkos if somebody went there. So the connotation just seems a little off.
That's a technical term, and that's the official term. But, yes, it does – for the people who are watching it, it makes them think of insider trading, which is something involving Wall Street, and that's illegal.
It just doesn't seem
that's
to benefit
different.
Spence at all to even take out a loan here. It's going to be more expensive over time. But anyways,
the banks often encourage their board members to take out loans because of that very reason.
Yes.
People who are on the board are generally people with money.
Mm-hmm.
And as you said, the banks do make money off these loans.
And conversely, what I just put forward is not a very popular counterargument. It's basically pointing to the fact that Spence is a super wealthy individual, and that might not endear him to places like Fredericktown or, you know, other rural outposts.
What he's most upset about is the fact that Nixon's ads keep referring to him as a banker. And in fact, in Spence's ads, one of his latest ones, I love it. It's got a picture of him. It's about something else. And the caption underneath says, not a banker.
Yeah. And that was what we were kind of discussing offline. Spence had been hitting Nixon by saying pay to play stuff and been really hammering him. And this is a gubernatorial race. This is kind of big boy land when it comes to politics. And you can't expect to throw a punch and not have somebody respond in kind. And Nixon has been a pretty historically tough campaigner. And I don't think this should be unexpected for him if he was in this race.
Right, because Spence has been accusing him of basically corruption because the governor has taken money from lawyers and law firms. And the governor takes a bridge, you know, is very offended by that, saying, wait a minute, just because I take donations from these people doesn't mean that there's something illegal about it. But yes, if you're throwing out accusations like that, you have to expect that they're going to come at you with all they have. And in this case, there's a lot of pictures of his vacation home that are showing
up. Yeah. And the fact that he can even afford to buy, as I just kind of mentioned, $1 million vacation home with cash. I mean, you know, you could make that argument in a technical sense like I just possibly did, but it's still doesn't necessarily make you look like an attractive candidate sometimes. So
Well, he did release his own ad. And going back to the joke I cracked earlier, in the first round of the ads that he released, it said, hey, go to spenceforgovernor.com. Governor was unfortunately misspelled with an ER at the end, which, of course, it's supposed to be an OR. Almost immediately, it was that URL was bought. I don't know if it's been confirmed, but it's almost confirmed that the Democrats bought it, and it now redirects whoever goes to that URL to a YouTube video of Jay Leno making fun of Spence.
Yes.
Learn how to spell correctly, I guess.
Yeah, well, the indication was that they must have put the ad together fairly quickly because somebody should have checked. Because, absolutely. I mean, or it's a typo. I mean, we all have had that. But this one, when you're running for governor and you have a typo on your ad and then the other side buys the URL and makes it an attack site, that's just kind of a misstep, an embarrassing misstep.
And I think that, there are some benefits of being a first-time candidate without a voting record. But I think there's some downsides. And that's kind of what I think Spence is experiencing now in the sense that maybe they're not going to attack him on, you know, how he's voted or things that he's advocated, but his personal life and things that he's done kind of outside of politics. And I mean, otherwise you really, I don't know what you do. You just maybe attack him on things that he says on the trail or something. But this is this shouldn't be too unexpected that the line of attack is going towards Spence.
Well, and the sad thing, I mean, looking at both sides here, is that this fight over ads and what's in the ads kind of distracts from the real issue in the governor's race, which is really what is the situation with Missouri? What is their vision for Missouri? And basically the governor is saying that things are gradually getting better, and Spence is basically saying, no, they're getting worse. We need a change. And so that's really the argument. But instead of people seeing the nitty-gritty of that, they're seeing these guys bash each other back and forth.
Well, there was a debate last night for the Illinois' 12th Congressional District between Jason Plummer and Bill Enyart.
And Paula Bradshaw.
And Paula Bradshaw. And I could not go.
Yeah.
And I could not go
to
it.
I didn't know where you were. I was looking for you inside the Lindenwood Auditorium.
I was talking to Ed Martin at the time,
awesome.
Unfortunately. So I couldn't go, but I did get a press release from Jason Plummer almost immediately after
did he
saying
win?
That he won. So
I got a press release
so
saying
that
Enyart
settles that.
Won.
Oh.
Well, I hadn't. I think you went to the Waterloo debate.
I did.
I went to the Belleville one, and I had been watching the debates online because my hardscrabble Honda Accord can't travel to Carbondale or Marion without breaking down. Obviously, that's not true, but that's my lame attempt at humor for the week. And you know, this race has just become kind of mired in acrimony. I think we've talked about that before. I think both of our pieces on the Illinois district races alluded to that greatly.
Absolutely.
I mean, this race basically has become just a mud fight between outside groups on the Democratic side and the Republican side running ads. And also, when they're actually face-to-face, they get into the kind of these bitter personal sparring matches. Mainly, you know, Enyart is insistent about Plummer releasing his tax returns. And interestingly, usually sometimes when he put that forward, Plummer usually ignored him. But this time he basically responded head on by saying that type of thing isn't public record. My personal financial disclosure is sufficient, which everybody has to put forward. And then turned around and said, well, you're getting a fundraiser. You're getting money from Nancy Pelosi, who I guess hasn't released her tax returns. I don't know that for
that's
a fact.
In California. Yeah, I don't
but
know
then
that.
Jan Schakowsky, who, for the record, I was technically my spiritual congresswoman since my mom moved to Evanston after I went to college. So I always like to reference the fact that I'm from Illinois. You know, she's doing a fundraiser and she hasn't released her tax returns. And her husband went to jail for some sort of malfeasance. So it was kind of turned around. It's like, well, you're criticizing me about this. Well, why aren't you criticizing people in your own party? And interestingly, I think in my old stomping grounds of Illinois 10, it's inverse where the Republican incumbent is asking the Democrat to release his tax returns. I hope I'm not wrong on that. If I'm wrong on that, we might have to edit this out. But that's just become a common tactic in Illinois. So there was more of that on display yesterday, for sure.
Well, this was like the fourth debate, wasn't it? The third or fourth debate. Was there anything new that was covered in this?
I think they asked a couple of different questions that they did before. I think they asked about how you're going to revitalize East St. Louis, which is obviously a vexing, very complicated problem that's beyond, I think, the job of a congressman. There was a question on foreign policy about, you know, what you should do about the Middle East situation. And I actually think Enyart and Plummer, they may have some sort of subtle differences, but they're not nearly as big as Paula Bradshaw's, which is, you know, reduce military spending tremendously, pull back. And Paula Bradshaw is a really interesting element to this race, sort of like Jonathan Dine is in the most Senate race.
Right.
Her husband, and I didn't actually know that this was her husband, Rich Whitney, who I actually met yesterday for the first time, got 10.4% in 2006 when he ran against Rob Blagojevich and Judy Bartpinka
as the Green Party candidate.
And to just show Illinois' voters' mentality, Rob Blagojevich, who had, I think, a 30% approval rating, won by 10% of the vote. But people were so angry at Blagojevich that they gave their vote to the Green Party, basically. So there is historical precedent for Green Party candidate doing well, especially in the Carbondale area for whatever reason. And it could possibly swing it toward Plummer, but she pointed out that adherents of Ron Paul are kind of interested in her campaign, so it could swing both ways.
Yeah, and I'm bringing this back to our first subject real quick in that the debate that's supposed to come up in the next week and a half in the U.S. Senate race, the Libertarian candidate Jonathan Dine will not be there. The sponsors aren't going to include him. And again, he has the potential of being the determining who wins, Aiken or McCaskill, in that race, because some of the polling I've seen has shown him,
you know, around 9%.
Yeah, which around 9%.
Really, which is really phenomenal for a third-party candidate.
To put it in perspective.
And it could be, arguably, probably, Republicans are considering voting for him because they're upset with Aiken, but they won't vote for her. So that's another case where the third-party candidate could end up being very important.
To put it in perspective, traditionally in a contested race where it's actually competitive, a third-party candidate, be it Libertarian or Constitutional Party, usually gets between 1 and 3%. If they get even above 5%, it's a big deal for Libertarians. And it could swing the outcome in a very close race.
Well, I think that just about does it for us here today, but we'll be back next week. Until then, you can find all of our stories at beyondnovember.org. I'm at stlpublicradio.org, and Joe and Jason are at stlbeacon.org.
Yes.
I'm on Twitter at CSMcDaniel.
Jay Rosenbaum.
Jay Mannies.
Until then, we'll see you next time.
So long.
Sayonara.
So long.